Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
And while we're on the economy, I have news, which is that avocado toast is not what's holding millennials back. Everybody's been waiting for the avocado toast update. We've got the avocado toast update. No. Millennials got shafted, and they got shafted merely for having entered the labor market around the time of the Great Recession. At least, that's the finding of a recent paper from the Federal Reserve, showing that millennials' spending habits look a lot like their parents. That is, they're not spending money on different things. The big difference is their paychecks don't look like their parents. So here to talk about these trends is Gabby Del Valle. She's a reporter for The Goods at Vox.com. Gabby, thanks for joining us on Radio Boston.
Evan, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So I got to start here. Are you a certified millennial? And if so, how do you know?
I am a certified millennial. I would say I'm a millennial Gen Z cusp, and I know mostly because I have no money because of when I was born.
Okay, so it's funny you brought the money thing up first, but usually I think the definitions start with the birth year first.
Well, the birth year puts me in between millennial and Gen Z, but millennials somehow seem better off.
All right, so I think my understanding, the traditional birth year thing is you're a millennial. You might be a millennial if. You might be a millennial if you were born between 1981 and 1996 or thereabouts.
Oh, then yes, I am a millennial.
All right, so by the Pew definition, you count. So were you surprised by the big picture? I'll mention one. So there's this big report from the Fed. They try to look over this thing. One thing they found on the economic side, millennials really do have less money. I mean, you were saying that, but that is the pattern. They earn less. They have lower net worth. Just to put this in perspective, the average net worth of millennials is $92,000. That's 20% less than boomers had when they were equivalent age and 40% less than Gen Xers had at equivalent age. Does that surprise you?
No, I mean, not at all, especially given, I mean, as you mentioned, our wages are lower than our parents' wages, lower than kind of wages from the past generations. And despite all of that, we kind of have more expenses.
Like what? Like what kind of expenses are you thinking about?
I mean, at least in my case, I'm still paying for my education. I graduated a couple of years ago. I will be paying off my student loans for the better part of the next decade, which prevents me from maybe putting money into an account so I can make a down payment on a house one day, or even from just buying more stuff.
So, I mean, this actually was one of the interesting findings in the report, that debt levels for millennials are actually quite similar to previous generations, but the makeup of the debt is totally different. That is, millennials tend to have debt levels about the same as their parents, but their parents had mortgages. That is, they had household debt, housing debt. And millennials, like you, have student debt. And that makes a big difference.
Right.
Yeah?
Right. Your house can appreciate in value, hopefully. You could, even just by you doing nothing to it, if you're in a certain area, your house could appreciate in value. My diploma, I suppose, is a form of cultural capital. It's definitely opened a lot of doors for me, but it's not necessarily appreciating at all.
Yeah, and in fact, it does seem to raise an interesting question about the value of education, the value of these diplomas, because millennials are the best educated cohort in American history. They are more likely to have undergraduate degrees. They're more likely to have graduate degrees. And you would think that this would translate into more workplace success, higher wages. The fact that it doesn't seems to call into question the value of education as an engine of opportunity. Do you get the sense that there's a general feeling of skepticism towards education?
I would say yes and no. I do remember reading recently, I wish I could find the thing that I was reading, people were talking about, I think there was a study done on how certain majors are becoming more appealing to people, majors that basically sound like jobs.
So yeah, pre-professional majors, versus, yeah.
Right. Marketing versus history or business versus philosophy. So I think that there is kind of a skepticism towards like this holistic, liberal, artsy kind of education because it is so difficult to not only get a job, but to get a well-paying job and to keep that job, that people are looking for any advantage that they can get, any leg up. And a lot of that is the kinds of education that we're pursuing.
It hurts me to hear it as someone who was an English major and like got a graduate degree in English. But you understand, if the money is not there for people who graduate with English degrees, why you might gravitate to other fields. I mean, has there been an erosion of other kinds of norms? Like, do you, as a result, feel differently about the old vision of the American dream, the old pattern, job, marriage, dog, kids, picket fence, house in the suburbs, all that stuff?
I don't know if I necessarily feel different about it as a concept, but I do think that it does feel out of reach for a lot of people, myself included. I mean, I live in a pretty small apartment. I don't have a yard. I can't have a dog, much less a house, because I can't buy one. And if and when I want children, like, that's also an expense. But also, really quickly, going back to what you said about education, I think it also affects the kinds of education that cities and states and governments will decide to invest in. Like, you see all of this talk about investing in STEM, really early on, like from like elementary school, because like the idea is, well, that's where the jobs are and that's where the money is. But maybe eventually that won't be where the jobs are and where the money is, and then we'll find ourselves in the situation all over again.
Yeah, just to reinforce that point, here in Massachusetts, we had a pilot program for STEM in preschools. So there was a lot of attention to STEM.
Preschool.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, you know, you can never start too early with your math and engineering education. So, but I mean, you see the attention given to it. Does this speak to like a broader lack of understanding across the generations, do you think? Policymakers not getting the problems of, oh, just to give an example, right? There was this big brouhaha a couple of weeks ago when it came out that Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she had about $7,000 in savings. This came out, right? And financial analysts came out and said, well, that's nowhere near enough. You know, someone at her age, they should have $27,000 in savings. And, you know, young people said, well, what are you talking about? Who has $27,000? It's usually, like, is there a broader divide in the way people understand the plight of young people today?
I think so. And I think the big barrier to not only understanding this problem but also fixing it is that it's often interpreted as kind of a personal choice or the result of personal choices. Like, if you chose the right major, then you should be fine. Or if you save up your money instead of buying avocado toast and a latte every day, then you'll have the money for your savings account or your down payment or whatever. But this problem won't be solved by looking for individual people to blame. The only really effective way to solve it is by thinking of it structurally. Okay. And I think that once that happens, that it'll be easier kind of to understand. There won't be as much of a disconnect.
Well, what does that mean? What does it mean to think of it structurally and try to solve it, not by telling people to stop buying avocado toast, but to do something broader? What's the broader thing that has to get done?
I mean, just starting with the cost of higher education in this country is a pretty good step, I think. Whether that is through lowering tuition at public universities, eliminating tuition at public universities, or student loan forgiveness programs, I'm not a policymaker, but, you know, anything that will kind of give young people more confidence in their ability to learn and to go to college if that's what they want, or trade school if that's what they want. And to know that when they graduate, they won't be burdened by debt for possibly the rest of their lives, which in turn, I think, would give them more purchasing power, more financial stability, will make them not only better consumers, but kind of just like less anxious people.
Well, I mean, one reason you might be hopeful about a future where there are structural changes is that there is one genuine difference between millennials and other and their prior cohorts, is that they do seem to be a lot more liberal, not just a lot more liberal now, but a lot more liberal than Gen Xers used to be and the boomers used to be. That's Gabby Del Valle talking with me about the plight of millennials. She's a reporter at The Goods at Vox.com. Gabby, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.